Hello again, I'm Armin Alney. Revelations of NSA spying threw a scare into internet users. Now the White House is proposing to regulate use of the same technology by retailers, employment agencies, and financial companies. We'll hear from privacy advocates and from Silicon Valley, which warns against limiting the fastest-growing sector of the economy. That's later on To the Point. First, this story. As the father of children in New York public schools, comedian Louis C.K. has become a sort of poster parent for protest against Common Core. That's the new federally approved program of educational standards designed to produce the critical thinking and analytical skills required for success in the global economy. Louis C.K. says, "My kids used to love math. Now it makes them cry." California has adopted the Common Core standards, but not for everybody. Tests are being given this year in grades 3 through 8 and grade 11, but no results will be made public. In fact, the tests themselves are being tested. Tom Turlickson is the elected superintendent of public instruction. His deputy for assessment and accountability is Deborah Sigmund. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Warren. Thanks for having me.
Are you testing the test because of protests elsewhere in New York and other states?
Well, we're actually testing the items because it's the right way to build a test. So we're going through the right process to make sure that the assessments that we give to our students are fair and valid and reliable measures.
Is California losing federal money because of delays in this process?
No, actually, we're right on schedule. We're not losing any federal dollars at all.
So what's happening right now?
Right now, we're administering our field test to about 3.2 million students across the state. We've completed about 2.6 million students. It's going very well. We're getting a lot of positive feedback.
So who ultimately will see the results?
So the data that we collect is used to make sure that the items are reliable items, that they do what they're supposed to do. And we'll use the data to set standards or achievement levels that we call them so that we can say how good is good enough. We want to make sure that we have the right content, and we want to make sure that we set the right levels of achievement for our students.
When you say that items are supposed to do what they do or doing what they're supposed to do, what do you mean by an item? Give us an example.
An example of an item?
Yeah.
Well, it might be an item that asks students to determine the area of a rectangle or something like that. It might ask a student to provide a short response about some English language arts question. And so those questions are looked at to make sure that there is no bias in the question and that all students had an appropriate and opportunity to respond to the question.
And they take tests on computers?
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. And how is this test and how is this curriculum, Common Core, different from what we've seen in the past?
Sure. Well, Common Core is a set of standards, and the curriculum that is taught in our California schools is a locally determined decision. And the Common Core and the standards that were adopted by California back in 2010 really provide a set of standards that ask students to think more critically, to be able to think about kind of the answers that they are giving on a test as opposed to just responding through a multiple choice fashion. So these tests get to much deeper critical thinking skills that we want our students to be able to do in order to be college and career ready when they leave the K-12 system.
Are they hard to grade?
Well, they are different to grade. Some of them will be scored via a computer. Some of them will actually be scored by teachers.
Once again, Deborah Sigmund is Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. Anthony Cody is with us, former teacher in Oakland. He was there for 18 years. He's been a mentor and coach on a district level for 6 years, and he now works with teachers as part of the nonprofit Network for Public Education. Anthony Cody, good to have you with us.
Thanks, Warren. Nice to be here.
You've been a critic of the Common Core. Why?
Well, you know, the trouble with the Common Core is that it's wedded to an accountability system that we've really been tied up with since No Child Left Behind came along. Even though the state of California has kind of pushed back on some of the accountability measures from the federal government, we're still looking in the years to come at schools being closed and teachers being evaluated based on test scores. And so far, The results of the Common Core tests, the tests that are aligned with Common Core, have been really dismal. Proficiency rates have plummeted in states that have taken tests aligned with the Common Core. Now, this the test that is being taken in California right now is a new test, but I'm just not willing to sort of suspend my critical judgment about this when I've seen what's happened in other states, like in New York, where something like 70% of the students failed the test, and English learners in particular, only about 5% were rated proficient. And so I have a big concern about buying into yet another accountability system that is based on tests.
When the test scores went down in New York, the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, said, well, that's what's happening in New York because the white middle-class parents there are finding out their kids aren't as brilliant as they thought they were.
Yeah, well, the truth is that our children are as sharp as we think they are. Our students are actually doing very well. We have the highest graduation rates in history, and overall test scores have actually been on a historic rise. So there's been a lot of hysteria built up to kind of promote Common Core, that if we don't do this, somehow we're gonna lose out in international competition. And that's just really a lot of bogus nonsense, really.
Let's talk to a teacher who actually is in the process of teaching according to Common Core. Ingrid Vieda is a fourth grade teacher at the 93rd Street Elementary School. That's in South Central Los Angeles. She's also South Area Chair for the United Teachers of Los Angeles. She represents 120 schools. Ingrid Vieda, good to have you on our program. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Have you had problems with the Common Core, or do you think it's a good way to go?
Well, we've had a lot of problems with the field testing right now. I was curious to hear that everything's going great, because at the school I am, we weren't prepared to handle the demands of technology. So our bandwidth cannot sustain the test. Students drop in and out of the testing window. I teach English language learners, and it's very difficult for them to get dropped out of the test, log in again, and then begin their train of thought again and their reading again. Because, you know, they have to work a little bit differently than most students. So we are seeing that we're not quite up to par with the technology part quite yet.
What about the test itself, the questions, and do you think, achieve the objective set out for Common Core to produce analytical thinking and more creative thinking about various subjects, math and English particularly?
You know, I feel that the intention of Common Core was to have a big set of standards that the whole country was engaging in that did do just that, what you're describing, critical thinking at a much deeper level. What we're seeing, though, is that there, you know, it's developing as a set of untested standards per se, and that we're expected to have the kids think in a critical way when we're not really exposing the kids to curriculum and research that would develop their critical thinking throughout the school year.
So let me go back to our first guest, to Deborah Sigmund, once again, the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction for Assessment and Accountability. What do you say to what we just heard from Ingrid Vieda, that there are problems with the technology, with the preparation, and with the curriculum itself?
Sure. So, one of the reasons why that California was so adamant about using this year as a field test year, not having an accountability piece to it, not having scores, not having it count, is so that we can make sure that we anticipate the very issues that the teacher was expressing, particularly around technology. California has traditionally been a paper-based assessment state, and so we're moving to an online technology-based system. So we wanted to make sure that we took this year to find out all of the potential issues. So we've geared up on our staff and so forth to make sure that we can send out folks who are having problems. I've already taken down that school, so we'll be sending somebody out to make sure that we can assist in that. In terms of the standards themselves, you know, the board did adopt the standards in 2010, and so...
That's the Board of Education appointed by the governor. Go ahead.
The State Board of Education. However, every local board can determine what standards they want to adopt. There's no, the state of California is a very locally controlled state, and so each local board determines what set of standards and what curriculum they are to adopt. So I think that, you know, just as we saw with our 1998 academic standards, it takes time for teachers to be trained. It takes time for the preparation and the staff development to actually get into place, which is why, as Mr. Cody described, California is taking a very deliberate and considered approach in terms of how we move into an accountability system. And so we want to make sure that we get the assessment right. We want to make sure that we maximize preparation and professional development opportunities for teachers before we actually start holding schools and districts accountable.
Back to Ingrid De Vieda at the 93rd Elementary School. Does that reassure you? Are you looking forward to getting somebody from the state to be helpful? Do you think that the kids that are now in this sort of interim period, are they going to lose a year?
Well, I think it's more, you know, yeah, they're going to lose a year, and I think that it's more complicated than sending someone out to one school. I teach in 93rd Street, but I work with schools in South Central LA. I guarantee you that at least 65 of my sites are having the same problems that my school is having. Technology, equipment, bandwidth, we're just not internet ready to go online. Are we going to need more than a year to get a district like LAUSD ready? I think so. I think a year is not going to cut it. I think we're going to look at 2-3 years. I think we also need to look at testing population. LAUSD, as everybody knows, carries a very high number of English language learners. And so are these tests going to do our students justice? I hope that everyone can look at that stuff. The other thing that we're seeing is that, you know, the experts that are training the trainers can't answer questions. The trainers can't answer questions, and the trainees can't answer questions. So it's this vicious cycle of nobody really knowing how it plays out with curriculum, with instruction, with testing. So a year is kind of rough. Like, are we going to have it together by next year? I don't know.
Okay. Before I go back to Deborah Sigmund, let me introduce a writer, editorial writer for the Los Angeles Times, expert on education, Karen Klein, who is also the parent of a high school junior. She opted out of taking the so-called Smarter Balanced tests this year. Karen Klein, good to have you on our program.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
How come your daughter opted out?
Well, this is not a statement against Common Core. I actually think the Common Core are good standards, and I think California is doing an excellent job of rolling them out with its slow approach to making test scores count and not giving them to all kids right away. I think California has been a real leader that way. Our concern was really more a personal one, which is, and perhaps gets to the larger issue, because when I hear people, even on this show, talking about Common Core, most of the talk is about the tests and about bandwidth and not a lot about what the kids are actually learning with Common Core, which I think can be very exciting. For us, the problem was that, you know, our kids have never liked the tests. We've always made them take the tests. This year...
These are tests that were in the past, not the current
yes,
ones. Go
that's
ahead.
That's right. And we didn't know what the new ones would be like, but it happens that this is junior year, and my daughter had the PSAT, the SAT twice. We did a brief winter flirtation with the ACT. Coming up are the SAT2s. This week she has 2 AP tests, and next week she has 2 AP tests. And she was just getting serious standardized test burnout. And she just was sort of moaning and groaning about this, and she was clearly feeling kind of stressed out. And I thought, well, you know, you can't. There are just so many times you get to alleviate your kid of that in some kind of legitimate way, and it just really wasn't that big a deal if she took the Common Core test to me. It was it gives the state one iota less of information to make its future judgments on. But I do think I think standardized testing is starting to get a little intense, and our focus on it for just about everything is starting to get a little intense. I'm glad that California won't be counting these scores for this year, and my understanding is quite possibly next year. And in the future, our way of measuring schools, called the API, is going to count more than test scores. These are positive things for the future.
Anthony Cody, back to you. Are you reassured by the fact that California is not counting the test scores this year, even though there is this emphasis on tests and other tests that Karen Klein refers to? But as far as Common Core is concerned, as we heard from Deborah Sigmund, there's a effort to be deliberate about it. Is that better than not?
I think that's better, but I think there's a fundamental question, which I think Karen Klein alludes to. Common Core doesn't break us of the addiction to tests as being central to education. In fact, it says that the answer to that is to make the test a better test. Honestly, I'm highly skeptical as to whether this test will fix the fundamental problems that we've had with a system that depends on test scores. And, you know, I think that the claims that this test measures critical thinking in some new way I'm really highly skeptical of them, because to me, if I want to know what a student is thinking, that's something that as a teacher I really need to exchange, you know, need to read their writing. We need to trust our teachers to do this work. The idea that you're gonna have these tests and give them even more frequently and continue to judge schools and teachers by them, and then these tests are shipped off to some computer to be graded, or to some warehouse where low paid test graders are paid $13 an hour to grade them, which is what is happening with a lot of the essay tests. Then I just don't have faith in that. I would rather that we reexamine our reliance on tests altogether and think about trusting teachers to really evaluate students.
Deborah Sigmund, Mr. Cody, but Deborah Sigmund, let me go back to you on that. Is that what's going on?
Well, you know, actually, the governor signed some huge legislation this year, Assembly Bill 44, sponsored by the superintendent, that really scaled back our assessment system. And implicit in the legislation was to do exactly what Mr. Cody is talking about, really rethink what assessment is and what its purpose should be. And so we've actually scaled back many of the high school assessments that we had in the system, recognizing, as Karen Klein had talked about, the kind of the burden that high school students feel with regard to spring testing.
Does scaling back assessment mean doing less testing?
Yes, absolutely. It means doing less testing. It means thinking about what is the purpose of testing. How can we use assessments to be an integral part of teaching and learning? We want it to really get to those deeper learning skills. And I just have to say that when we contract for these assessments, we will have California teachers score these assessments. So in terms of the writing, in terms of the performance assessment pieces.
Karen Klein, back to you. As a parent with a kid who is burned out on testing for reasons that are pretty understandable, given all the tests that you mentioned, is that good news?
I think that could be good news. I think more important than how many tests we give might be the quality of the tests that we give, as was already mentioned. Common Core, as a set of standards, is a good set of standards. Then on top of those standards, you have to build the curriculum, and I don't really think states had a lot of time to build their curriculum. That's something that's still ongoing. What you're teaching kids and the materials you're using for that are very, very important, as is the quality of teachers under Common Core. It's a lot tougher to teach kids how to think than it is to just feed them knowledge that they can spit back. And then the final part of that is high-quality tests that actually measure what it is we were trying to get to in the first place. And I think there have been legitimate concerns about whether our tests have done that in the past. It's not an easy thing to do a standardized test. I think they have a role. I wouldn't want to get rid of them. I wouldn't want to leave it all up to my students' classroom teachers to determine whether they have learned what they need to learn that year. Because like any parent, my kids have a certain number of teachers who are great and a certain number of teachers who come in and tell them stories about their personal lives every day and don't really teach them much of anything. So I think we need standardized tests to make sure that the the basic education that we've all agreed students should get is actually going on in the classroom. But we need high-quality tests. I don't think our previous tests were high-quality tests. And on Common Core, I haven't looked at them super closely. I'm certainly hearing enough stories to say we need to look carefully at adjusting the tests.
All right. The process is going on as we speak and will for some considerable period of time. We will come back and address it again. Hopefully all of you can join us at that point. To Karen Klein, again, editorial writer for the LA Times, whose high school junior daughter has opted out of the Smarter Balanced tests. Thanks to you. Thanks to Ingrid Vieda at the 93rd Elementary School and the UTLA. Anthony Cody, former teacher in Oakland, now with the Network for Public Education, and Deborah Sigmund, the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction in, for the state of California. Great to have all of you on our program.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
In a moment, should the Los Angeles Metro go to school in the physics of wind power on Which Way LA?
You're listening to Which Way LA from KCRW. Share your comments about today's show at kcrw.com/whichwayla. Or join the conversation on our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter, at WWLA.
Warren Olney back with Which Way LA. LA Metro is spending billions to upgrade its rail transit system on projects like extending the Purple Line to the West Side. It wants to harness green energy. But a project to capture wind on a Red Line train platform has experts in physics scratching their heads. For KCRW's independent producer project, Roger Rudick reports that going green may not be so black and white.
Even if you've never seen The Seven-Year Itch, you probably know the bit where Marilyn Monroe's skirt is blown by a subway train.
Ooh, do you feel the breeze from the subway? Isn't it delicious?
Her skirt lifts because subway trains generate wind, lots of wind. Chris Lieben is with LA Metro. His job is to look for ways to save energy for the agency.
Yeah, my staff and I were like, you know, standing one day in the platform and, you know, somebody kind of lost their toupee. And then we said, oh, you know, the wind here in the subway, you know, the platform is kind of strong. So maybe we can harness this and see if it's something that we can actually use.
Lieben and his colleagues decided to outfit the tunnel with a wind turbine, a device that turns all that air into electrical power, to see if it could run the station's lighting and escalators. And that's the sound of the prototype, churning away in the North Hollywood subway tunnel, with trains whooshing by at 70 miles per hour. Depending on the results, Metro may include them in the Purple Line extension under Wilshire Boulevard. So at this point, you may be wondering why nobody's ever tried this before, unless you're a physics expert.
So I was a student here. I did my graduate work here, my master's and PhD in aeronautics.
That's Kim Aaron. I caught up with him over breakfast at the Athenaeum Club at the California Institute of Technology. Now he designs spacecraft for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And he's all for windmills and green energy, but not for putting them in subway tunnels.
Clearly it's air that's driven by the train. It's not as though the tunnel system is open and that you have natural wind blowing through.
What's wrong with Metro turning some of that airflow back into electricity?
What they apparently don't understand is that installing a wind turbine is going to put some back pressure against that air, which is ultimately going to push back against the front of the train, sort of an additional pressure acting on the front of the train, which is going to slow the train down or require you to step a little bit more on the gas, so to speak.
Aaron says Metro's turbine is a classic example of what's called a perpetual motion machine, or what physicists call a scam. It's an historic idea for a machine that supposedly runs without energy or generates surplus power from nowhere. Professors such as Red Alon of Southeastern Louisiana University use perpetual motion machines to teach the laws of conservation of energy, basically that nothing in life is free.
We can show that now, and we do it in introductory physics labs. But back then, they didn't know that. So it was easier to maybe even con yourself into thinking that would work.
Alon also writes about perpetual motion machines for Wired magazine.
So, you know, it's always fun to kind of look at the physics of these different ideas and to say why it wouldn't work. And they don't work. That we don't have any perpetual motion machines that give us free energy.
Emilio Graf is manager of the Lucas Wind Tunnel at Caltech. He tests the aerodynamics of everything from jets to hot dog stands.
Let's say somebody comes to the wind tunnel and says, we want to see if our windmill is any good. So we put the windmill in the wind tunnel. If I don't turn on the fan, the windmill is not going to spin, right? So I have to turn on the fan to see how much power their windmill generates, and that obviously takes electricity, right? So it's the same concept in the tunnel with a train.
Now, that said, aerodynamics is no easy science. Graf says it might be possible to skim a bit of excess wind energy from a subway, despite Aaron's skepticism. But it requires serious finessing.
If you put a windmill there, then you're adding a load to the wind, so the train's got to push harder. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a total loss, because there are cases where there is uncaptured energy that can be harnessed.
So I emailed the question around to academics and engineers all over the world who focus on the air effects of trains and tunnels. There was disagreement about whether Metro's turbine would waste juice, net zero, or, at best, capture a sliver of surplus energy. But nobody thought it could be cost-effective. Metro's small prototype was $600,000. So, okay, practical considerations aside, since Metro already installed a prototype turbine, what happened? Yes, it grossed enough electricity to power some lights and escalators, but was it a net positive? Or is it a perpetual motion machine that's really just stealing energy from the trains? Metro's Chris Lieben.
We didn't measure any on the train side. So, I mean, yeah, you may be right. I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
The turbine has since been removed from the tunnel, pending further studies. For KCRW, I'm Roger Rudick.
Metro officials say that that turbine generated enough electricity to power 12 homes, but they are still evaluating the technology. There are photos of the Metro turbine on the Which Way LA blog. That's at kcrw.com/whichwayLAblog. You can also join the conversation on our Which Way LA Facebook page. In a moment, profits, privacy, and your personal data on To the Point.